big hello from Zana and Jess.
Hey!
And you're listening to Keep Your Gin Up.
We're back for another sexy episode mm-hmm. where we're going to talk to you all about being a travel nurse and going to start off with a little bit of intro about us as well, because we have started this podcast already and we released an episode last week, but we also didn't really kind of give you too much about us because we were very much focused on our amazing guest speaker. Mm-hmm. So we want to focus on a little bit of us, where we came from, and then, yeah, basically what the hell a travel nurse is, because we got asked so much what a travel nurse is. And we want to share it with you because we think it is the most awesome job, and anyone who's thinking about it, we can help them out, or anyone who's doing it, we'd love to talk to you about it and kind of, yeah, discuss it all.
Yeah. Actually, so, really funny thing happened today is we'd already planned to do this podcast and talk about travel nursing because obviously that's what we're about, right? And I looked through my message requests because I got sent a message from someone I'm not friends with, and there's a message from the 9th of October 2020 of a lovely girl named Chloe who was asking me all these questions about travel nursing. And like bulk questions, and I'd only just seen it. And I thought, what a coincidence.
Also, like, you left her on red for a whole year.
I did. So sorry about that. But like, we get asked this stuff all the time, and like Instagram and Snapchat and Facebook. And it's because we just like love it so much and we get asked it all the time, which is why we started the website.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much is exactly why we started the website. There wasn't a platform out there for travel nursing. I think there's a lot of platforms out there that has information about all other kind of jobs, but specifically travel nursing and like what it entails, what you do on a daily basis, what you bring on you to a contract, all these things. Like, you couldn't find anything online. And that's why you started originally, because you were going on a contract and you wanted to know what to pack, and there was nothing there.
Yeah, I literally was Googling like what to pack as travel nurse.
Yeah.
And, like, nothing. And I was just like, I have a tiny suitcase of 10 kilos because I was going on such a small plane. And I was like, how am I supposed to put 3 months of my life into a 10 kilo suitcase?
Mm.
I'm a woman, for goodness sake.
Exactly. Impossible.
I know.
Impossible.
But after 3.5 years, I am a pro.
I know. And that's why I want to share all the deets with you guys, because we have it down pat, really. Mm. We have all the tips and tricks that you need to be a travel nurse. So at first, we're going to go through who we are, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Who wants to go first?
I mean, I think you should go first, Zana.
All right. Well,
who the hell are you?
I'm Zana. I'm 27, almost 28 in November. I'm so old. No, I'm really not that old. 28 is the best, or such a good age. So anyone who thinks they're approaching their 30s and is scared, don't be scared. It's the best years of your life.
She's just trying to make me feel better because I just
turned 30. Also, just trying to make myself better because I'm coming to 30. Honestly, no, I actually think it's the best years of your life. I really do.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Especially with what you've gone through the last few years.
Mm. So, yeah, my life was pretty peachy, looked pretty normal to everyone on the outside for pretty much my entire life. I was in a relationship since I was 19 with the same guy for 7 years. We ended up getting engaged. We got married. And then all happy days, a month later, he left me for someone else.
Yeah.
1 month. Literally to the day, 1 month.
How many days was it again?
What, 28 days, I guess? 31 days. 31 days, actually. Or 30 days. Whatever days has January.
Oh, well, Kim Kardashian.
I don't really want to think about that right now. Anyway, I beat Kim Kardashian because everyone thought that her wedding was the quickest wedding in the world. But actually, it was me.
It's you. Yeah.
So if you look in the Guinness World Records, I'm actually there.
it's such a shocker story. Like, I'm obviously used to the story because I
hear it a lot.
Very well, and I hear it a lot. But I just love dropping it on people too, because they're just like, whoa.
I actually told my patient today. So my spill the tea that will be coming up later is actually about this patient. But we were talking about just life in general. He's like, oh, so you married? And I was like, oh, yeah, I was. He left me a month later for someone else. And he's like, this guy did not stop talking to me for like hours. And he sat there in silence. And he's like, I actually don't know what to say to that. And I was like, yeah. So
most
basically,
people don't know how to respond to that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite a huge...
Yeah, it's like, is she going to cry? Yeah. Is she like, what's going on in her head? Do I say something? Like, they're like, they don't know what to say because they're like, is she still emotionally fucked from this?
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm actually fine. It was now 18 months ago. And I decided to do travel nursing because of it, basically. So I'd always wanted to travel nurse. I always wanted to do contracts away, but I didn't because I actually was just scared of being away from my partner for so long. And I thought, like, I was just scared of being alone for such a long period of time because I'd never been alone for that long. There's a hole in my vagina.
There is a hole in your crotch. You're lucky. You're
far out. Everyone's lucky. Why has she stopped talking?
I'm so sorry.
There's
a hole. She literally just crossed the legs in front of me, and she's got.
Okay, listen. I got home. I went pole dancing today, and I got home, and I put on my comfy pants, thinking we're going to do this podcast. Didn't realize I was going to be sitting cross-legged across from Jess. With my hole in my crotch out. Luckily, I have undies on.
Yeah, we're pretty close, eh?
Okay, sorry. I'll put my hand there to cover it up.
Sorry, continue your story.
I don't even know where I was. I didn't know what I was talking about. Oh, sweet Jesus. This is what happens when we try and start these podcasts.
No, okay, you were saying, I remember now, 18 months and you started to travel nurse. And
yes, that's what made me start to do it. I always wanted to travel nurse. But yeah, I was always scared to be alone and been going away for too long. When I became single, I was kind of like, what am I going to do? And I was working in the same job that I'd been working in for such a long time. And despite like the breakup, I was actually kind of hitting a rut in where I was working as well. Working in ICU for a really long period of time, especially when it gets really intense and you deal with a lot of traumas and deaths and things like that, and you get super close to these patients, it does take a toll on your mental health. And I needed a break from that as well. So I think it kind of all coincided at the same time, and I just needed a clean break. I basically signed up to an agency, and within like a couple of months of signing up to the agency, they had basically got me a contract. And my first contract was actually in Griffith. So I left August last year. So I was doing it for a full year before we decided to settle in Brisbane for a little bit. But then, yeah, before that, I was actually wanting to move to the UK, and then COVID happened. COVID. So instead of, I was kind of trying to run away from my life in any way possible. So the original thought was to move to the UK because it's the furthest you could possibly get away from your life.
It's what happens when you're married.
And I have a couple of friends that live in the UK, and I was like, oh, that'd be a great opportunity to live with them and hang out with them because, yeah, I'd not seen them for so long, and then COVID happened, and I didn't want to be nursing in the middle. I know this sounds really selfish, but I didn't want to be nursing in the middle of a pandemic and not being able to do anything or see anyone, especially when I was away from everyone that I'd known. And I do feel really bad that I'm not over there helping, because UK is in such dire straits right now and nurses need to come together. But I also wouldn't have been able to do anything. I wouldn't even been able to explore living in London. Yeah. So it kind of defeated the purpose for me of going there. And then travel nursing came up, and I thought, well, Australia is still open, so I can still travel Australia and do that. So yeah, it was the greatest decision I've ever made. I went to Griffith, I packed up my entire life into a car. I'd pretty much chucked everything out with my ex. Really, we sold everything and I had a couple of boxes. So I really packed up my life into a car and went to Griffith with no plan of a future contract after that first 6 weeks. And just winged it and didn't have a break since. Like, I got contract after contract. I went to Griffith and then Wagga and then Grafton. And Grafton was in a jail where I met Jess.
Yep. And literally met in March.
Yeah. So we actually, didn't meet that long ago, as we said in our last podcast. But we just kind of clicked and decided that we wanted to do the same thing and share our information with everyone. We came together and banded together, and now I don't think we've spent more than like 2 weeks apart in the last 6 months or however long that is.
Yeah, that was a long 2 weeks too.
We were like, can you come home now?
That was tough.
It was tough.
So what exposed did, that's not a word. Jesus, why don't
you? What exposed you?
Yeah,
what?
That's a word. What exposed you to travel nursing? Like, how did it even pop up?
Oh,
on your radar?
A couple of my friends actually who I worked in ICU with had done contracts before. So two of them, one of them had done a contract in Mount Isa, and he went for 8 weeks, and he just got leave from work and went for 8 weeks, and he loved it. And then another girl, Beck, she also did it as well. And she left for like an entire year, I think, as well. And she traveled around heaps of places. I think she was in Mackay or somewhere around there, Mount Isa, and then somewhere else. And then she actually came back to Vinny's a year later and told me how amazing it was. And because I couldn't get into the UK, I just started asking all these questions about it. And I was like, maybe this is something I could do, because she kind of ran away. And I'm like, I want to run away. And so she kind of introduced me to that. So yeah, it was from another travel nurse, I guess. Yeah.
I think a lot of people get scared to start travel nursing because of the job security side of things.
Yeah.
But what I found is a lot of people that like do decide to go and do a contract, they're always welcome back into their work. Like, for example, she went away for a year and then went back to the same job.
Yeah, to the same job, yeah.
If you, like, if you're a good worker, you can always get your job back. We're nurses, for goodness sake. Like, there's always work out there.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened to me when I started. My boss was like, God, if it fails, Jess, and you don't like it, you can always come back. And if you have that talk with your boss and you're like, I really want to do this travel nursing gig, but I'm so scared of job security, you've got that.
Yeah.
You just got to talk about it.
But the thing is, like, I mean, she's an exception of coming back to her job, but the vast majority realize how amazing travel nursing is and all the opportunities that you can get from traveling around that most people don't go back to their jobs.
No, they don't. And you
and in your mind, you think you're going to go back to that job. You're like, oh yeah, I'll just do this for a little while and I'll go back to my job. But once you realize what's out there, you don't.
I know. Like, for example, 3.5 years is when I started doing it. I left Perth and I haven't been back.
Like, she hasn't even back to Perth, let alone.
I went.
Oh, you went for a holiday.
One time. Yeah. Oh my God, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I literally did my contract and then 3 months later came back for 2 weeks and I have not been back.
Yeah.
Holy moly. That's a long time. I've been trying though, FYI, it's just because of COVID, but
yeah,
just for a holiday. But like, yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah. So it's interesting where it takes you and like how your life changes because of it. And yeah, I've grown so much as a person. I thought like when I first went through my breakup, I thought, I can either go down this path and crumble and become this shell of myself and let him win in this situation and let him ruin the rest of my life. But I kind of sat there one day and I was like, you know what? He's taken 7 years from my life. He has ruined my marriage and I'm not going to let him take another day of my life from me. So I just decided I'm going to pick myself up and put my big girl pants on because there's nothing else I can do. I'm an adult. I need to grow the fuck up and move the fuck on. And yeah, I just thought one day, like, you only get to live this life once. And I think especially doing nursing and especially working in critical care areas, you realize how short life really is, that it makes you just really appreciate every day. And I thought, I'm not going to waste any more time.
And look,
I'm
just going to do it. Look at you now.
And every day I grow more and more. Yeah. And that's amazing.
See, I love that.
Yeah.
And that's why we bonded so much as well, because we're both like, you grow so much as a person and you become so independent and so just you're authentically yourself when you're on these contracts. That's what I find. And then you just meet the most incredible people throughout the journey.
Yeah.
Which is like Nikita, the guest speaker last episode. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Me and her have been so tight. I met her during my first contract as well. I'll go a little bit about how I started.
Yeah, go for it.
So 3.5 years ago, I was working as a recovery nurse back in Perth. I had done like ward nursing and like scrub scout and then got myself into recovery. I kind of like Zana as well. I had a long-term partner of 4.5 years and we built a house together. And I was honestly just so content with life, like just thriving off life. And my world just totally crumbled one day when I'd found out my partner had done the dirty on me. And I definitely, I tried to get through it and I kind of forgave him and did that again, but he just did it again. And I was just it actually destroyed me. Like, I was so shocked. And I had a lot of friends that were there, but actually it gets to the point where people don't really ask how you're going.
They don't understand it either.
They don't. And no. I was just in a really fragile state. And then I got myself a new place to live in and I was just in a lot of debt because when you're building a house with someone, there's a lot of financial issues that actually arise and you have to go to court and everything. And it's just, I was in a really, really bad space. Anyway, I was at work and I had the most supportive workmates ever. Shout out to the girls at Joondalup. I love them so much. They are just amazing. But they actually said to me, they introduced me to a girl who had done the travel nursing and she had just returned from, I don't even know where it was now, but she had just come back from a contract and she was a scrub scout. And I had 1 5-minute conversation with her and it was all I could think about. And I sat down with my boss and I told her and I was like, I want to do this contract. I've just contacted the agency. Like, I literally, this is in 24 hours. I just move fast.
Spontaneous.
And very spontaneous. And my boss turned to me and she goes, do you know what, Jess? I just think you should resign. And I was like, huh? And she was like, I think you should resign. She goes, if it goes to shit, you can always come back. But she goes, the world is your oyster. And she was like, you know, we don't gossip here or anything, but I obviously know what's been going on the last few months. And I think you need to do this. And I was like, oh my God, woman, you're amazing.
So sweet.
And so I packed up, did my first, I did a 3-month contract. So you don't have to do 3 months. Like, it was a bit scary for me, the length yeah. of that one. But you can do 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 3 months. But I chose that one because it was my first one I got offered. And my world just totally opened up.
Mm.
And I decided, I was like, mainly because I decided to be an official nomad because I was like, man, I get free rent.
Yeah, that was one amazing highlight of this whole entire thing.
Free rent, man.
Yeah.
Like for 3.5 years, I haven't paid rent really. So that's
free rent and you get paid more.
I know.
So like you're earning more and not spending anything.
Yeah. So I guess we'll get into the nitty gritty of like actually talking about it. So like there are multiple agencies. There are actually so many. So there's
You can't
Healthcare Australia. There's Affinity Nursing.
First Choice Nursing.
First Choice.
There's Sustain Health.
Yep.
There's Oz Health, I believe as well.
Yeah, there's another one that New Zealanders use all the time, the Kiwi Girls. Nurse on Call. That's a really popular one for Kiwi nurses.
Mm-hmm.
There are actually so many. But the most that I see that do rural remote contracts is Healthcare Australia and Affinity.
Yeah.
They're the top two.
Yeah.
So if you're looking into it, they're definitely the top two ones to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Another perk is you get a higher hourly rate. So from my job in Perth to my very first contract, I think it was a $15 increase per hour.
Yeah. So that was it. Where were you doing it? Sorry, Perth.
That was from Perth and then doing my first contract in Griffith, New South Wales.
Yeah. So the states are all super different with the pays as well.
Mm-hmm.
So with New South Wales Health, you're paid by New South Wales Health, but you're paid a casual rate. And then you get penalties on top of that. So you're basically getting casual rate at full-time hours.
Yeah.
So you're a full-time employee with full-time hours, but you're getting a casual rate. So you're getting, $10 to $15 more an hour as your base rate. And then your incentives are on top of that, obviously, as well.
So free accommodation.
Yeah.
Everything's walking distance.
Mm.
And because you're new, you're not really like blowing a lot of money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're just like buying your food. And so if you're thinking financially, you want to save some money, like it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
100% amazing. So that's the financial, because a lot of people ask us that. Hey, it's like,
Money? And obviously Jess is an RN8 and I'm an RN5. So she is getting paid significantly more than I am anyway. As everyone who's a nurse listening knows, you go incrementally up from RN1 to RN8 and then it stops after RN8. I actually found out that Queensland stop at RN7, but that was interesting.
Maybe they put me down to a 7. I haven't actually looked at that.
But anyway, they obviously go up to an 8. So Jess is on the highest paid that you can get. With Queensland Health, the agency actually pays you. So Queensland Health don't pay you. It's actually paid by the agency. So each state has slightly different. So Queensland actually is one of the best paid of any state.
Yes.
We get paid really, really, really well here, which is amazing. And at the moment, we're obviously working in metro area. We're working metro for our agency.
Yeah.
But we're still getting paid.
Troubleness.
Yeah. Great money doing metro as well. So you don't have to just travel nursing to get paid great money. It's more the fact that you're not paying any rent. So if you have an opportunity to lease your place out, move out of your place, some opportunity to not pay rent anywhere else, then it's a great opportunity to save sick money.
Yeah.
Like you can be getting paid. We're working at a jail and we're working 60 hours like a week. So I guess putting that into perspective, that's a lot of hours a week. But after we got our pay, we were getting like $2,400 to $2,400 a week take home.
Yeah. That was after rent. Tax. That's no rent. Yeah. So $2,400, sometimes even $2,500.
Yeah.
And that's like in your bank deposited to you every week.
Yeah.
And but we work like dogs there.
Yeah. You work like a dog, but you could also go for 6 to 8 weeks and earn, what is that? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. I don't even know what that is.
I know. 12, like 40, everyone does this to save like for a house, grand. For example. Mm. And if you really want to save a house, that's the way you can do it.
Yeah.
But so I had a lot of debt when I split with my ex as well. So I was able to slay off that debt, but also I just got to like really just enjoy my life. I actually went and lived overseas in Indonesia for 6 months. I had to buy myself a new car. Like I've just been able to do so much.
Yeah.
As well as grow and get through like, you know, my heartache back home in Perth. So that's awesome. I'm very proud of that. I've got some questions here. Actually, what questions did you have on there?
We could maybe talk about some myths and like misconceptions about working in travel nursing. Like what are some things that people say, oh, like I couldn't do it because of this? Or
a lot of people think it's because of the job security, but like I've never been without
no.
a job.
No, and there's so many contracts. And the thing is, if you're willing, I know it's obviously hard when people have families and connections and things that they can't necessarily leave. But if you are flexible, you can have contracts back to back to back for the rest of time if you really wanted to.
Yes.
Whereas you do work really hard on these contracts, and we like to kind of have a holiday in between each of them. So I think it's personally a great idea to do a contract for 6 to 8 to 12 weeks and then have a couple of weeks off to kind of recoup, explore around the area a bit more as well, and then head on to your next contract. Yep. Because you're getting paid so well, having those couple of weeks off, I know you're not getting paid annual leave, but because you've been getting paid that higher hourly rate, it kind of covers you for all of those things as well. So I guess other misconceptions are that, like, you're literally in the middle of nowhere, there'll be no one around and you'll never make any friends because you're going to be so isolated. Mm-hmm. But I think feel like that's a very common misconception, because those little communities that you go to are closer than any place that you've ever been.
Yeah.
Everyone does know everyone. And I guess that is a scary thing. So you have to kind of be careful how you act and how you present yourself at these facilities. Because if you portray a bad personality, then everyone's going to know about it. So you do need to be on your best behavior, but you should be anyway, because you're an adult and you should act like a normal adult anyway. But yeah, the communities are so close, and the travel nursing community when you're there, because there is so many people doing the same thing, and they're all kind of, there is a lot of agency nurses that go to these places. It's not just going to be just you, because a lot of these places are basically made up just of travel nurses and agency nurses, because they live in the middle of nowhere, and it's hard for people to stay in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So you do have this very tight community, and it actually is very easy to make friends. I've made some of my closest friends in my entire life from doing travel nursing, because you're in the same boat and you're in the same position, and you're all alone from everyone. Like, no one has family there. It's very rare that someone would bring their family with them. So I think that's a common misconception, is that, like, you'd be super isolated and alone, but you're really not.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I mean, the contracts I've done, the smallest town I've actually gone to is a town of 4,000. And I mean, it's a small town, but there's always these neighboring towns that are around. Mm. And like, it really didn't feel that small to me. And then Griffith has over 10,000 people. And yeah, Griffith was a great sized town. Yeah. It's funny because we actually both went to Griffith, but different times.
Yeah. It's a common place that agency nurses go.
Definitely. Mm. And it's, oh my God, I've gone back. I've done probably over a year's worth of agency in Griffith in different amounts of contracts because I love it so much there.
And if you love Italian food, it is, it's like so Italian good. Capital. Like, yeah, it is basically majority of the population that's there is Italian.
Yeah.
Apparently now the Indian population is almost taking over the Italian population, which is super interesting.
Yeah, no, it definitely is increasing. I knew that from when I was there. But Griffith, you'll see they always have contracts up, and it is such an amazing place. Like, we both did our first contract there.
Yeah.
And it's what started our careers as travel nurses, and the feel and the people and just everyone there are so amazing. And it's such a great size facility, and everyone just takes care of one another.
It's literally exactly what I needed to run away from a city. It was like the exact opposite to a city.
Yeah.
It was so nice and so small. There's like one street, so you could walk everywhere. I loved walking into town and getting coffee in the morning and
so
going
beautiful.
To the gym, like the F45 that was there. There was one F45 and like everyone was friends with each other. And I had such a good routine while I was there. And it's exactly what I needed when I was going through such a hard and rough time in my life. I needed to get back to my roots and realize why I loved nursing and why I loved my life. And it was great.
It does. Yeah. It ignites something in you.
It does. Yeah.
I remember the town I went to with 4,000, that was in Temora, and that was such a tiny little hospital. It had like a tiny little ED of like 3 beds, plus the ward, but it wasn't classed as an MPS. So an MPS is, what is it?
Multi-purpose system, isn't it?
It's kind of like an aged care facility with a tiny little ED attached to it. So I've never done an MPS personally, but it was like just one step above an MPS. So technically had its own little ED plus a ward, but it kind of was an aged care facility, but not really. It's just we had people there for longer period of time than you would in a traditional hospital, like in the city, for example.
Yeah.
But just met the most amazing people, the most down-to-earth people, like such great experiences. Every contract I've done, I've actually genuinely loved.
Yeah.
Genuinely loved. And a lot of people get so scared that they're going to get there and be, I don't know, bullied or like alone, or I don't know. People just get really, really scared.
It's out of people's comfort zones. That's what's scary. I think a lot of people are very scared to break out of their comfort zone. You get into this little bubble and you've got a stable job and you've got a stable home and you've got all these things that are like in your mind, like, stable and, like, everything is good in your life because nothing's changing. And the people, like, people get stuck in these kind of controlled situations because they're so scared that if they do break any of those things that are making them stable, they will completely fall apart.
Yeah.
And I think that people are so scared to break out of their comfort zone because they don't know. It's the unknown. And of course, we're all scared of the unknown. I'm scared of the unknown. Getting into that car when I'd packed my car up, I was like, holy shit, have I made the biggest mistake of my life? Or is this going to be the best decision? Like, you don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's a, like, that's a scary thing, but you also won't know if you don't do it.
Exactly.
So it's,
I actually personally love exploring the towns that I work in. Yeah. Like, on my first day off, I always like take a little backpack and I walk around the town, and I actually make it an effort, especially in the tiny towns, as I go into every single little store, and I have met the cutest little old ladies ever.
Yeah.
Like, the most cutest.
Honestly, it's great.
People ever, ever, ever. Another question that I've been sent in is, so how often do you usually stay at one place? And as we said, it's minimum usually 6 weeks, because that's when you get, so you get travel to and from your home. So say you're from Perth and you're doing a contract in Queensland, you should get your travel paid for from Perth to the contract and then back again.
And all that's right? Driving, flying, ferry, whatever it takes to get whatever you there. They will pay for it.
6 weeks is usually the cap of where they'll pay for that. So that's awesome to know. If you wanted to do a 4-week contract, it is possible, but sometimes there's a cap of, say, $500 of your travel allowance, like, both ways, which can work as well. But usually 6 weeks, but you can do shorter. So you just got to speak to your agency consultant. And then another one is, do you get to choose the places you go to? Yes, of course you
definitely
do. You have, you're in full control. Like, so every week, both Affinity and HCA do this. They send you out a, what do you call it? Like a
weekly board.
Yeah, like a weekly board. And it has, like, all the specialties, and it has all the states and, like, how long the contracts are for. And then it's just, you use your initiative and actually contact the consultant and say, hey, I saw there's one in Hervey Bay for 6 weeks in October. Can you put me forward?
And even if you want it altered, if you say, hey, I saw this contract, I really, really, really want to go, but I can't get there to the following week, or I can't get there for 2 weeks after that, can they make adjustments to those dates? All those consultants need to do is contact that facility and put that forward. And if they are wanting staff and they're desperate, the chances are they're going to say yes.
Yeah. You just got to use your initiative and actually, like, I don't know, reach out and actually ask, because that's all you have to do. I didn't know you could do that initially, but the more I started doing contracts, I was like, oh, wow, they are flexible.
They call it, like, and there's also places that do, like, reverse, I don't know what she exactly called it, but it was like reverse marketing. So basically, they, if there's a place you really, really want to go and you've traveled around and you've seen, oh, hey, I really want to go to Cairns, and Cairns isn't on the list this week, and you say, I really want to go to Cairns, I have this amount of time that I'm free to do it, I can do it anytime within these 3 months, or I can just do these specific dates, they can reverse market you to that hospital and say, hey, I've got this nurse, she's free these dates, do you have any availability? What are your plans coming up? And a lot of the time, they also, that works as well. And you can actually get exactly the dates you want, where are you on.
Yep, that's so true. And places like Cairns actually have that a lot.
Yeah.
I actually went to, when I left Indonesia, I was in Townsville, and it was a bit of a, I had not planned it. And I was like, okay, I've got to get back into nursing. I don't know really what to do. Anyway, I called the consultant and I said, oh yeah, I really want to do recovery. And she actually said to me, look, there's not a lot of recovery work here. Like, I don't really know how much you're going to get much work. And I was like, crap. The next day I got a 3-month fixed contract while living in Townsville. I didn't get a free accommodation with that one, but there actually is a lot of free accommodation that you can get. But they knew that I was living there with my family at the time. Yeah. So they were like, we'll give you this 3-month contract. And I was like, yeah, cool. I mean, weekly pay, agency rates, but you just have to ask.
Exactly.
Another really important one, and this is, like, honestly so, so important, is a lot of people don't think you can career progress.
Yeah.
And so I had been a nurse for, I think, 6 years when I started, and I had done a mixture of, like, ward, scrub scout, and recovery. And I started as a recovery nurse on my first contract, but they had actually taken me not just as a recovery nurse, but also, like, an all-rounder, it's called. So, like, scrub scout, anesthetics, and recovery. As soon as I got to the facility, I obviously was like, these are my strong points. Like, I'm a recovery nurse. I've only done, like, a minimal scrub scout, but I'm willing to relearn. And they were, like, happy with that. So I relearned my, you know, Scrub Scout skills. I got to work at the hospital, and then I actually got to really network and meet everyone in the hospital. And because I kept going back, I actually approached them and said, look, I really want to get to emergency. Like, I really want to get my foot in the door. And when you've been a nurse for so long, I think everyone can agree with this, to try and get your foot in the door with either ICU or ED is so incredibly hard.
It is hard. Yeah.
So hard. And I was so lucky enough to get a 3-month contract in ED as an agency nurse and got trained.
Mm.
And then COVID hit and I stayed in ED. Then I got to go to another facility and do emergency. And then I even got to go to Tasmania and work in emergency. And I was, you know, the thing is you always be honest with your skills and you say, I'm junior, you know, or like, I never do resus because I'm so junior and I need to be properly taught all that stuff. But I say to them, like, yep, I can do acute, I can do fast track, I'm still junior, these are my skills, and they love it. As long as you're a hard worker and you're honest about your skills and your scope of practice, they're always willing to teach
you. Yeah, exactly,
yeah. And the smaller facilities always are willing to teach.
Yeah.
And that's how I've been able to career advance. So now I'm like, what, I'm about to be 10 years out of uni in February, I think. It'll be 10 years.
Wow.
And I've been able to now do, with agency, it's taught me emergency nursing, and I've also been able to do primary healthcare in corrections, like a correctional setting. So now I've got
awesome
prison work under my belt as well.
Yeah.
As well as Scrub Scout and recovery in the 3.5 years of doing agency.
Yeah.
Like, holy moly, look at all those.
Yeah, for sure.
That career progression. It's insane. And I'm actually so thankful. And I think if I stayed in Perth, I probably would have still been in recovery, which I definitely love and I enjoy that field, but there's no really progression.
Yeah.
I would have just stayed there because I was comfortable.
And there's definitely certain people that like to stay comfortable and they're very comfortable in their jobs and staying in that position. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. If you're someone that is like, I'm happy with this job, I don't have any need or desire to progress, and that's absolutely fine. But I'm someone who's super antsy, and I've like, basically since I finished school, I have not stopped studying because I'm just like, I'll have like a year off and be like, I want to study this, I want to do this now. Like, I just constantly want to progress myself and like learn something new. And I'm someone that like thrives off progressing myself and my career and just my knowledge in general. So like, that also was one thing. I was like, oh, what am I going to learn rurally? It's going to be basically everything. I'm going to know everything kind of thing. Cause I'm like, oh, I've worked in a big ICU, but it's so, so, so different. And I learned so much of how to just kind of deal with situations when you are so isolated. Like, you don't have doctors right there. The doctor that is the ICU doctor is like a locum doctor that isn't even an ICU trained doctor. It's like a cardiologist or a surgeon.
A lot of the interns go to smaller hospitals to do their training.
Yeah.
As well.
And
they're the only doctor available.
And they come for the week or 2 weeks or whatever it might be, and they're on a rotating roster, and then they're not there. They go home at the end of the day and an intern's on call or a resident's on call. And you're like, if anything happens, you need to know what to do in those situations and how to act as a rural nurse, because you're it. You are the doctor, you're the nurse, you're the everyone in that time frame. You need to know what to do to keep that person alive until that doctor or that consultant can get there.
Yeah.
So,
and you can trust your gut. Like, my gut's gotten so strong and my clinical judgment has gotten so much better since being an agency nurse, because I'm constantly like watching and I'm constantly learning and I'm constantly just like, I know that what's available around me. So I'm like always kind of not on edge, like in a way, but I'm just always prepared, because I'm like, if something goes downhill, I need to know what to do.
Exactly. And like, I guess the thing about working rurally is the equipment is so different. So like the equipment that we use in a rural setting is so different to what we use in a city, because
kind of ancient.
It needs to be, it's ancient, but it also like is great. It works super well. They don't change it because it works super well. And they have these like completely different processes and policies that are hard to get used to when you're first there.
Yeah.
But they also like are made for a rural setting. So I guess like in an ICU setting, a unique piece of equipment that we use quite a lot is called an iStat. And that's a piece of equipment that basically replaces the need for an ABG machine, which is an arterial blood gas machine, which we use in ICU all the time. Like, some patients have them done every 2 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours, whatever it might be. If someone comes in with chest pain, you can check anything that you want to check. You can check their potassium, you can check their electrolytes, you can check their sodium, you can check anything on those, you can check their blood count. Whereas these ones are a tiny, tiny little machine that you basically insert a cartridge into and it can tell you everything. They have troponins on there as well. So you can actually get a really, really quick, within like 4 or 5 minute troponins on an iStat machine that you don't have to send to pathology and wait a couple of hours for, because sometimes those things that happen in rural settings are so time critical, because a lot of the time they wait until the last minute to come in. So they are very, very, very sick by the time they get there.
Yeah. So it's really very, very handy. And especially as a nurse, like, so yeah, you can do ABGs and VBGs as well. Yeah. So venous gas as well as arterial, but as a nurse, we can't do the ABGs.
No,
the
VBGs. No.
But
I have no idea how to find the artery and I'm not going to try.
We're not going to do that. Always stay within your scope, everybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you know, for example, like when you're in smaller settings and if someone presents with chest pain, straight away call the doctor. As the doctor, as you've literally got the phone on loudspeaker, you can be putting a tourniquet on, putting in an IV, getting blood, running a troponin, doing an ECG. So by the time the doctor even arrives to the facility 10 minutes later, you've presented them with everything. You can be like, positive trop, this is an ECG. Mm-hmm. Let's call the ambulance to get them to a bigger facility now. Like, and it's just, you've got to use your brain like that, but you've got those things there in place that you can use. And it's like, you never know that when you're in a bigger hospital. You just depend on the doctors so much.
You use your critical thinking so much more working in a rural setting.
It changes the way you're a nurse, trust me.
It does.
There's another one that says, how many years experience do you usually need?
This is a good one.
I reckon, we haven't even discussed this before, like reading this question out, but I think you should have at least 4 years. That's just like off the bat.
That's a lot.
Yeah, because
I didn't have 4 years when I started.
I feel like because the first year you're a grad and you're still learning time management, and sometimes you're in like different areas, whether you're surgical, medical, or sometimes people do theater. Like my first, my grad program was 6 months neuro ortho and then 6 months
I think scout. Yeah. I think it's dependent on where you've worked in your new grad and your following year after that.
Yeah.
I would say try and do new grad and a year after your new grad to solidify your knowledge. And I personally think after 2 years, but that's personally because I worked in ICU and I did have a lot of exposure to critical care, which already developed my skills so quickly.
Did you do your grad program in critical care?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I think a lot of people, like, I don't know, because there's a lot of people that don't get so lucky to be able to get into that kind of pathway, which is why maybe you advance so quickly.
Yeah.
But like for me, I felt like even 4 years in, like I had done like my basic ward nursing, learned all that, you know, even just learning terminology and stuff as a nurse can take, you know, a good year or two to like learn all that. Even surgical compared to medical, like surgical going on a placement and learning all the different abbreviations for like, you know, a total knee replacement, like, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you look at it and you feel so stupid and you're like, I don't know what like a TKR is. Like, what is a TKR? And then you're like, oh, total knee replacement. Like, duh.
Oh, it took me so long to figure out what a NOF was. I was like, what fuck is a NOF?
You know?
And then never, obviously.
You know, I think that takes time when you're learning to be a nurse and time managing to like learn even those abbreviations.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, maybe halfway, maybe 3 years. What do you reckon 3 years?
Yeah, I'd say 2 to 3.
Yeah.
I think also just judge yourself. If you feel like someone that has progressed and you need to do something more or learn something different and you kind of feel like you've gotten to this point in your career where you want to challenge yourself, then I think going and doing a rural contract is great, because you can do like ward nursing as a rural nurse anyway. Yeah, so you don't have to progress into those critical areas. So you can still do whatever you want to do in a rural setting. It doesn't have to be critical care, just because we're both from critical care backgrounds.
Just like always be honest about, you know, what you know, stay within your scope, but always say to places when you go to facilities, be like, hey, I've never, like, I just recently worked on a renal ward and I'm really not that familiar with renal. And I was like, hey, I'm not really that familiar with this. We've got a bit of a quiet period. I know you don't say quiet in a hospital setting, like,
never.
God, so sorry. Oh, thank God I'm not at work right now.
Yeah.
But, and I was like, touch wood. But, you know, use that time to talk to the, you know, nurse in charge or the like someone, and just be like, hey, do you mind just like running through this with me? I actually go to the pamphlet wall that they give to the patients. I even get the patients to educate me.
Yeah.
I literally, I'm like, hey, you've got this weird ass condition. Spend 10 minutes telling me about it, because that's weird and I don't know what it is.
A lot of the time in those rural settings, they also present so often that like everyone in the hospital knows them. So by the time that they of seeing you, they know everything about their condition, they know everything about what the process is going to be that they can actually tell you. Yep. They'll be like, oh, usually at this stage they'll put this in, they give me this, they'll do this, and then like they just know everything about their situation.
You learn so much. And just remember, like, that you can be a nurse for 20 or 30 years and you're still learning. Like everyone is constantly learning as a nurse. And like, just as long as you are honest about your skills and you stay within your scope, then you're ready to be a travel nurse. So you know, whether it's 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 10 years in, it doesn't really matter. It's just about your honesty. And if you want to learn, you can absolutely learn so much.
And also you can teach them things. It works both ways. You are coming to a rural setting and you might feel like you're inexperienced or you don't know everything, or you're coming into the setting and you're like, oh my God, how am I going to work with them? I don't know anything about what they do. They also don't know what you do from working in a city.
Yeah.
Like they, a lot of the time, especially when I was working in ICU in Griffith, they didn't know a large amount about pacing. And they used to get a lot of patients come in that were like waiting to be transferred to Sydney or wherever for CAGs and things like that. And they had pacing boxes. And a lot of them hadn't been educated on pacing boxes. And the girl that I was with, Anna, we both come from ICU at St. Vincent's in Sydney. And we did a lot on pacing. And she specifically works in cardiothoracics. And so she actually basically ran a little in-service. It was very informal, but she ran a little in-service and like what to do, how to recover a pacemaker or an external pacemaker if something happens to it, like what everything needs to be at, your sensitivity and your voltage and all those things. And she actually taught them more about it as well. So it helps in both ways. You can teach each other things that they don't see. I actually didn't realize that some of the things that we saw in ICU and in a city, they don't see rurally. They have this machine called a ventricular assist device, which is basically motor thing that sits in your heart and basically pumps the blood in and out of your heart through your it does the work of your ventricle for you. And it's obviously called a ventricular assist device. And they don't ever see them in the country.
I've never bloody seen that.
Yeah. And I thought, because I'd worked in ICU in Sydney, that this was a normal thing, like everyone knew what they were. And then I went to the country and they had no idea what that was or what it even did, and no one had them. And basically you live with them until you get a transplant. And sometimes they are also, you use it for end of life care. So it can be either a bridge to recovery or a bridge, basically like a bridge to like end of life.
The deathbed?
Yeah, pretty much. And sometimes it's just kind of waiting. It's basically giving you a hard time to wait until you get a transplant if you're eligible.
God, you just taught me something, mate.
And you go home with this ventricular device and you go home with batteries. You're attached permanently to batteries, and there's so much they have to do there. So they always have to carry extra batteries. They can't leave home for too long. They can't go swimming, all these crazy things. And literally if it gets unplugged, their heart stops.
Whoa.
And I didn't know that these things didn't exist. And apparently I heard this story in one of the rural towns that they did this x-ray on this guy who had a VAD. So they call it a VAD, which is like an abbreviation for it. And the doctor said to him, oh, you've got this thing in your, like, we have to remove this. This is something like, this is strange. Like, you have something in your heart. We need to remove it. And the guy was like, no. Like, call my cardiologist. Like, this is my heart. You cannot remove it because that is my heart.
See, so even the doctors learn some new things,
doctors,
you know?
Yeah.
God, so
this
funny.
This is fascinating. Yeah.
So, I mean, you see, and it's never a dull day.
Never
a dull day. But what we're doing right now is we're doing metro nursing right now. So we've gotten a little rental in Brisbane, and now we're doing the metro side of things. And I think we'll do a podcast later where we talk all about, like, you know, metro versus travel nursing. And like, because we've learned a lot, I actually was super scared I wasn't going to get enough work, and there's a lot of pros and cons to it. But we'll definitely do that in another episode.
Mm.
But
if you are thinking about it, get your travel on. Just get it. Pack that suitcase, pack that bag, and don't look back.
I don't think I've ever met anyone that has said that they didn't.
No.
Like every single person I've met has turned into us, actually.
Yeah. And a lot of them end up buying caravans, buying modifications for their cars so that they can live on the road full time. It is amazing.
Yeah.
The people that you meet is awesome. And once again, we also have left our spill the tea until the end of our episode.
Oh, yes.
We're supposed to do this at the end. We're going to get good at this. I'm sorry that we keep making disjointed podcasts, but we're just new to this thing.
Hey, this is our second one. Like,
But also we wanted to kind of get to everything about travel nursing anyway, and then maybe we'll give you a little story at the end. So Jess can tell us her spill the tea because it was so good.
I mean, my spill the tea last episode was pretty freaking hilarious, but this one is quite funny. So I did an ED shift here in Brisbane, and it was on Sunday actually. And I you know, everyone wears masks here now because that's just the new mm-hmm. norm. Everyone wears masks. And sometimes you see people that you kind of recognize, but you're not too sure. And anyway, there was a student nurse on the ward, in ED, sorry. And she went past me and she was like, oh, I feel like I know you somewhere. And we're trying for like 5 minutes to figure it out. And I was like, oh, look, I'm an agency nurse. I work all over Brisbane. Like maybe I've met you at another facility. And then we're trying to figure it out. Anyway, it just wasn't working. She's like, there's actually no way from what we've discussed, like that I would have met you. So she's like, how do I know you then? And I was like, does my name ring a bell? Like, my name's Jessica. She's like, yeah, I don't know where it is. And I just, for some reason, was just like, do you follow like nursing like pages or websites? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, do you know Nourished Nurses? And she's like, yeah. I was like, that's the one that I run. And then she was like, oh, so it was so strange because that's never happened before. And so I got to tell her about this podcast. So,
So we're officially famous. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. We're famous. Oh, we've been spotted.
So happy though that people are actually utilizing the website, mm-hmm. like because that's exactly why it is there. And I was like, bloody hell,
we can
like,
legit now retire because we've made it.
we've made it with our beautiful hobby.
Made it. Honestly, like that is amazing, and I would have been so humbled by that.
I was so humbled, and I wanted to get a selfie, but my phone, I'd left it in a different part of ED, and you know, I was busy. I had patients to care for, so I had to get back and, you know, save their lives. So that was just really funny. So that was my spill the tea. That was on Sunday, 2 days ago. Mm. Hilarious.
Well, Jess's is like a happy spill the tea. Mine's not a very nice spill the tea. Yes, and it happened to me today. And I actually haven't told Jess this yet. No. But I met this guy today. This guy I was looking after, and I'll give you a little backstory of why he's in ED in the first place. So I was working in ED today. Super interesting case. So he actually had his melanoma removed from his head like a month earlier, and the stitches removed a week before. So he'd had quite a lot of time for healing of this melanoma, which was fine. And he thought everything was good. The doctor said it looked good. He was sitting on the toilet. He hadn't opened his bowels in like 3 days. And he was sitting on the toilet I was walking around the house and I thought, movement. And then, I decided to go to the toilet. So he sat on the toilet and he decided to strain, and he started straining and straining. And then he told me, I was straining so much, I even lifted my leg off the ground.
I love how we're talking about poo again in this episode.
Yeah. Anyway, then he said, I felt this trickle down the side of my head. And then he started bleeding from his melanoma site. He lost 1 liter of blood, the ambos think, by the time they got there. His blood pressure was low. He was in, apparently his bathroom looked like a murder scene.
Did it dehiss?
It must have.
That's like, some serious straining,
some
mate.
Serious straining, but also like it had been a month, and also the stitches had been out for a week. So that thing should have been healed.
Well, I mean, yeah, but that's a big, big rock inside him that he's trying to get
so
out.
So yeah, they thought someone had died in there because they estimated a liter
but
of blood.
Like head brains bleed so much. It's
and
so
also sick. Side note, it makes you realize that when they say don't strain like post like a stroke or post cardiac surgery, this is why you don't strain, because that actually creates so much pressure inside of your body.
You shouldn't strain anyway, mate. Like everyone just focus on your bowels.
I know.
You shouldn't be straining, but yes, especially when you're fragile.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's not even the fun spill the tea. That's not even it.
Oh no, because I was thinking,
that's not even it. This is just the backstory of why he's in ED.
Oh God.
This guy, I thought a lot of other people talk a lot. Like I thought Jess talked a lot. And I thought other people talk a lot, but this guy takes the cake. He did not stop talking.
He's worse than me.
Yes. Literally, I couldn't leave him. I couldn't leave him. He kept talking to me. Anyway, he told me his life story within like 5 minutes of me being there. So he's in his 70s. And he basically, I don't even know how it came about. I don't even know what we talked about. But he basically told me about his life and how, like what happened to him growing up and living his life. So he was married and he had two kids. And he drops on me that his two children, when they were 5 and 4, were killed in an accident. He didn't specify what accident. I'm assuming some sort of car accident, but they both died on the same day at the same time. And then a couple of weeks later, his wife committed suicide.
Oh, God.
And this was while he was in his early 30s. And so he was left completely alone. And he got super, super, super teary when he was telling me. And I know it's been like 40 years, but he was still super emotional about this. Obviously, he would be. It's completely traumatic. But he's now 70 and he's lived this full life. But he said he got married again And he, this woman that he was with wanted to have children. And he said he thought he wanted children. And he realized after he'd been with her for a little while that he just couldn't do it again. And he just thought, no, I don't want children. So that relationship broke down. But he's actually like he's a writer. He's a professional writer and artist, and he's lived all over the world, like in every single country, Johannesburg, Korea, everywhere, writing for these amazing advertising companies. And he said he doesn't have any, like he's got one sibling that he hasn't talked to her for 30 years. His parents had, he was the only one of his mum's family that had children. The mum had five brothers and sisters, and no one had children. She was the only one to have a child. So he has no cousins, not a single cousin. So he literally has no family. Like nothing. And he says he's just got millions of friends and he loves his life. He just like was so passionate about how much he loved life. And get this, when I dropped him off, I got him a cab and I like waited outside with him after he got discharged because his bleeding stopped and he was all fine. I was waiting outside and he goes, just live your life with love and laughter.
Holy moly. I know. Serious?
Yes. And I was like, I say that. It was weird. And even when I was like, weird. Oh my God, I say that every day. And then I was dropping him off and he's like, just like I told you, love and laughter. And I was like,
you literally said that at the end of the last podcast.
At the end of the last podcast. Isn't that weird?
How'd you say it last podcast? You said,
I said, here's to love life and laughter.
Holy moly. This is freaking me out.
And it's like, it was like meant to be that I met this guy because I've been feeling in a little bit of a rut in like at the moment. I don't know whether it's just moving to a new city and we're finally standing still for a while and it feels so different to what we're used to.
It feels freaking weird.
Plus the fact that I can't see my family and that feels strange. That I'm just feeling not myself at the moment.
They're in Sydney, FYI. That's what I'm seeing.
And I just don't feel like myself. And I feel like maybe that happened for a reason, like to make me realize how important life is, because this guy has lost everything and he still picks himself up every single day and he just gets on with it. And it just made me like really appreciate life. And I was like, you know what? I've been in this rut, but girl, you need to pick yourself up because there's this guy going through something way worse than you. And that's, I think maybe he came along for a reason and
definitely
that's what it was. I feel like everyone in this, I'm making a little bit of a segue, but I feel like everyone that comes into your life like that, patients, friends, there's a reason that they come into your life to change you in a positive way. And I think that was why.
Weird that we're taping the podcast today and I opened that message up from a year ago today and that you just had that today.
Yeah.
That's weird.
It is weird.
Anyway, that's why we're doing this podcast.
Yeah.
We're going with the flow and we're going with what feels right.
Yeah. We want to spread love, life and laughter.
We do. And we want to talk about shit with life and everything.
Yeah.
But also side of nursing. But we're not all just about nursing.
No, it's not just for nursing. And I know we're starting off with a lot of podcasts about nursing, but it's just kind of because that's who we are. And we want to kind of give a backstory of who we are and where we come from and what we're here to provide. But we also have these funny life stories and we are all going through the same things. We have mental health ups and downs, and we might look like these super positive, happy, bubbly people on Instagram, but everyone knows Instagram is not always real. And we all have these lulls in our lives and we all have these ups and downs, and we want to be there with you guys through all of it and just show you that you're normal and everyone is going through it together and we all need to support each other.
Yeah. And instead of us paying for counseling, we can just do this podcast. Exactly. That will help us.
Weekly hour sessions of counseling with Jess and Zana. There you go.
You poor souls.
Anyway, on that note, I hope you have a gin or a glass or something in your hand, and we're going to raise a glass to keep your gin up. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye.